Welcome to A Couple of Nobodies.
Yes.
Brian here with my friend Jeff and another friend of mine, Clark Beckham.
The Clark Beckham.
Right. I'm glad to have some of my friends on the show.
Finally.
I felt like it was a minute where Jeff was like, hey, I have this author. I have this pastor friend. I have this. And I don't know if nobody was responding to emails or something. But I was emailing all my friends that are awesome, and Clark answered the email and sent me a text message one night. He was like, hey, Clark sent me a message. Hey, is this really you? Did you email me a podcast thing? Is that kind of how it went? Like, Clark, you were like, what is
yeah,
this?
Well, yeah, I saw the email and saw your name, and I thought, well, if he wanted me to do a podcast, he would text me. This email is so official. I'm sure it's not someone pretending to be you, but at the same time, I was like, what is this? And yeah, so I just texted
you. We do live in a world that everybody wants to be Brian Lindsay, though.
Dude, I would love if someone wanted to pretend to be me.
Someone was just like trying to get to me, and they're like,
I keep the same password.
That's our N.
Hoping someone like steals my account. Like, I refuse to change my password, hoping, and they don't even try. Like, I don't even get spammed at all. My password is password. Like, it's just password. The whole world and nobody. Like, the hacker looks at me and says, nah, let him go. He's had enough trouble.
Even you saying that, you're still not going to get hacked.
Like, right.
It's yeah. saying it won't happen. Still.
Have you been spammed? Are there, like, fake Clark accounts where people are
Sure. Yeah, there are a few like social media accounts. I don't know if they're still around, but there have been like just random. But there are a lot of fake podcast scams.
Really?
A lot. Like I get two a week of, and they're very easy to find now, like to point out. But they're all the same. They'll have a big well-known podcast, and then they'll be claiming to be the assistant of whoever the podcast is, and then they'll say we want to hear your insights or something like that, and it'll be paid like $2,000 or $4,000 to come and be a guest on this show. Are you interested? And then what they say is like, well, it's a virtual podcast and it's going to be through Facebook Live. And then they convince you to give them permissions on your Facebook so that you can stream. Wow. And then they steal like all of your information. That happens all the time. I even got on a Zoom call with a person and to like confirm when I was trying to figure it out. And it was a real person on Zoom talking to me, and then I found out it was a scam.
Oh, gosh. I don't know why they're not emailing me. Why?
Yeah, I don't know.
I
don't know.
So I got,
if that happens twice a week to this guy.
I can forward them to you.
Not a podcast scam, but I got into a job scam.
Okay.
So I filled out this work from home job thing, right? And it felt sketchy all along. And they were like, we're gonna buy you a computer for your work at home life, but we're gonna send you the check. And so I was like, whatever, they're not sending me a check, right? So you've got the job and we're gonna send you a check, buy the computer, buy everything you need, send us back receipts. And the company's supposedly in New York. And I promise you, FedEx was next day at my door with a check. A live check. Now the company was the company was FedEx I was supposed to work for. And the company is a live check for a tobacco company in North Carolina for $5,000. And I call the bank and I was like, okay, I've got this check for $5,000 from this company that says I need to buy a computer, but it's not their name. And they're like, oh no, that check is real. Don't cash it because it will be considered fraud and you'll be arrested.
I mean, could you just have cashed it and been like, oh, weird, I don't know, and never talked to me?
I mean, I thought about it, but I didn't know who was coming for me. Like, I was like, am I going to get, my knees broke by some...
Oh, my gosh. Tobacco, man. I mean, devil's had that money long enough with the tobacco plants and
I
stuff.
I got some regrets on not cashing it.
Yeah. I feel like the Lord provided and you were like, thanks for no thanks, man.
Maybe that's why I'm where I'm at now.
Yeah, over there. So Clark knew this wasn't a scam because I was. It was like, hey, Brian has no money for you. Would you do it?
Yeah, we offered zero. I've told my assistant, if any podcast offers money, it's fake.
It's fake, yeah.
So if I ever do get a podcast that's like, can we pay you? And they're real, I will miss that opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are all Lee University guys. Those are the we're all people who love Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
All fans of music.
Yeah.
Right? Jeff's a fan.
I'm only a fan.
Right? Only
a
fan.
I won't name who told me to quit.
Okay. And we are all married.
Mm-hmm.
But not all of us have kids, right? There's no...
Correct.
No announcement. We're not dropping any announcements today,
no,
are we?
Nope, nothing
to
announce. You're
trying to break news, man.
Where are you right now?
I'm in Nashville at home. Just came back from a tour and leaving again tomorrow for first show in Ohio. But I am home for the time.
Okay. And that's hometown, right?
Yeah, White House, Tennessee.
Yeah.
I grew up here.
Yeah. Is it tour life right now? Is that kind of the thing?
You know, we took a stab. It's been a while since I've toured. I really put the pedal to the metal on social media for the past couple years and have gotten a lot of success there. And so I thought I'd try a tour again. And we kind of jumped the gun and didn't promote it well. And there were a lot of factors that went into that. And then honestly, the shows didn't do great as far as ticket sales. And so I had a meeting with my manager. I was like, hey, let's try again and like actually promote it right in like a year. Mm. So it's now more just like one-off gigs, doing some church stuff, doing some concerts, doing some events, teaching quite a bit, stuff like that.
Okay. Lee University Campus Choir.
Mm-hmm.
Then American Idol.
Mm-hmm.
And also University Chancellor in Canada.
Dean of Music.
Okay.
Dean of Music. I didn't know this. We are breaking news.
Okay, so Dean of Music in Canada at a school and go.
Yes. So I had visited this. So a friend of mine, Ryan McVitie, is a vice president of Canada Christian College.
Okay.
And I had visited to sing and stuff there before. And they were in need of a new dean of music. And their concept was, we want to develop this music program to be uber practical and not like your typical music degree that's classically focused.
Okay.
But real world today, 21st century focused. And their idea was like, we'd love to get somebody who is an example of an artist today to be like the face of the music program and to be the dean. And then we'll have a second dean that will actually do the curriculum and all the work and meet with the students and like oversee all of the courses and the professors and teach a class and do all that. And they interviewed me and I was like, man, I think I could just do both. Like I think I could be the actual dean instead of like the face of the dean and then someone else does all the work. Like I love teaching. I have a very clear vision for what a college degree, college curriculum should look like for a music degree. And this let me at it. And so they said, okay. So Chandley and I flew up there two or three times a semester. Otherwise it was all virtual. And I wrote the full curriculum and had to hire and fire some professors. That was really tough. It was a total rebuild. I mean, when I got there, there were, I think, 12 students in the music program. Mm. And then I was there for 2 years. And at the end of the 2 years, I think we had like 45 or 50. and they're still growing. They're doing great, and yeah. they're doing really well. So that's kind of how that works.
Is that the door you saw opening when you left, like American Idol? You're like, one day.
No. Canada, no.
Christian.
No. No. I mean, honestly, being the dean of music at a accredited yeah. college was, I never knew possible. I didn't think that was, I could do that, you know? And it reminds me of the verse, like, above all you could ever think or imagine, you know, that's what he has. And that was a perfect example. It's not that he had bigger dreams than me. He's just more creative than I am, you know?
Yeah.
God. And so that was an example of that. I loved it.
What's that been like as far as like opportunities, the ones that you just kind of seize, you like almost rolling the dice on it. Hey, I'll give this a shot versus like doors that open. I feel like your career and life has been like way over here and then here. Like you are singing in somebody's house or private concert on an island somewhere or health coaching somebody with like a legitimate life change transformation, which maybe we could talk about off air.
We're going to be signed up for Clark Beckham Fit.
Yeah,
I'm already following on Instagram.
The difference between like a door opening and an opportunity that you're like creating, how are you doing that?
Man, I think it's a combination of like a physical work ethic and a creative work ethic. Mm. Like keep your eyes open, mind open to constantly look for the opportunity. Follow what you're, so like one skill that I have is teaching. That has materialized in dozens of different opportunities and ideas. One is like the fat loss health coaching thing. And then the other was dean of music and making a music curriculum for a bachelor's degree.
Yeah.
Another is one-on-one Zoom lessons during COVID with students. Another is doing music workshops for a classroom. Another is being a professor, adjunct professor at a few different universities. And what I've found is as I'm just saying yes to as much as I can that makes sense, I'm finding some of those things I do and I go, oh, yeah. I'm made for this. And some of the things I do, I'm like, I don't like this. As soon as I don't have to do this anymore, I will not do this anymore.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's a lot of it is me coming to grips with sometimes when I am doing something and it makes sense on paper, but I don't enjoy it. I just tell myself it's because I'm lazy or it's because I'm not grateful or I'm undisciplined. And I'm starting to learn that there's a sense of, no, you might just not be made for that.
Yeah.
Called to do that. Because there are other things that I feel very alive and good at and called to. And it's still very hard. And I still have to be very disciplined. So it's not a lack of discipline. I think that's the most recent development for me is noticing, okay, it makes sense for me to do this, but it's not life-giving to me, and I don't think I'm supposed to do this, no matter what everybody else tells me.
Clark, would you
this
say...
This feels right.
Yeah, some of these spots where you're going, maybe this isn't right, are they outside of your skill set, or maybe are they just lanes that you don't want to take your skills into?
That's the confusing part, is they're right in line with my skill set. Mm. And on paper, it makes all the sense in the world, financially, spiritually, like in every sense of the idea, it all makes sense. And then every time I'm about to do it, I'm dreading it and I don't want to do it.
So would you say...
And that's really it.
Yeah. So are you discerning that through the spirit? Or, I mean, for our friends who may be sitting there going like, I've got opportunities that seem like a home run situation. But I got something in my spirit saying, don't do it. how are you discerning that and how are you making those decisions?
Honestly, my discernment is I really don't like doing this. Like, it's just that simple. It's like I'm doing it and I'm like, I don't like this. And there are good moments, perhaps. But for example, the three things that I've come away with that I am made for, that I feel so good and in flow state when I'm doing, is preaching, teaching a classroom, like one to many or a workshop.
Yeah.
And singing, like performing, like doing a concert where it's my show, my set. I get to take the audience on a journey of stories and songs. And it's like my 90 minutes of entertainment to entertain you and try to give you the best show of your life where you never check your phone. Like those three things are where I'm like, that I feel I am made for that. And pretty much everything outside of that feels like me trying to make something work that I can do, but I kind of feel like a first baseman playing outfield. Mm. Like I can do it, but
I almost see like those as like these ingredients, right? Like, and some people will see like, okay, I could take an onion and I can take chicken and I can take butter, and they only see one thing that you can make. And then other people would see a few ingredients and see 10 things that you can make. Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. I can make it. You give me these five ingredients, I can make 10 things. There are people who would say, okay, preaching, teaching, singing, bro, worship pastor. Duh.
You're supposed
to be a worship pastor. That's, I think, the question is, when you look at those ingredients, they're probably, you could go 7 different directions.
Yeah.
And then there's the thing where people are saying, this is what you should do, this is what you should do. And you look at those ingredients, you say, I could do that. But then when I get there, why does it feel life sucking out of me?
100, that's exactly right.
When I'm doing that. So your discernment is giving it a try. And in real time saying, whoa, wait a minute, I can do this. Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't feel like this.
Yeah, right? And it's a surprise. Yes, and it's a surprise every time. Like when I'm starting to do it, like I remember one thing that would make all the sense in the world for me to do and be good at, but I'm not and I don't enjoy it, is I had this idea. I was like, well, what if, like, I've produced my own projects independently. There are people out there, artists, that want to have things produced. I know how to do it on a small budget. They can hire me to produce their project and I'll do like a what I've done with my own, but I'll produce it for them and I'll help with the arrangements. I'll produce their vocal. I'm a good teacher and I'm a good coach, so I can help people in that moment. This makes all the sense in the world. There's the clientele there. There's like the price point that makes sense. And I get to hire my friends, you know, like I get to give work to my to Austin Goodloe and to like, that he needs any help now. But all of my friends, like, this makes so much sense. I'm so excited about this.
And
like, was Austin, and I get just in the studio and I'm like, store? Sorry, I'm interjecting. Was Austin
the guy.
Yeah, he's just with Ben Rector. Sorry.
Yeah, he didn't need any help getting work anymore. But all that said, I'm there and it all makes sense on paper. And I'm just finding myself not doing well. Like, I'm not enjoying it. And then the product isn't as good as I wanted it to be on my part, on the production, the end of it. And then I'm not good at organizing with like the mixing engineer, the mastering, and then taking notes from the artist and what they want and how this needs to change. And I'm like, oh man, I'm not good at this. This all makes all the sense in the world in so many ways, but I don't like this. And I'm not good at it. And so it's trying and then discovering in the middle of it, like, oh, this sucks. Or, oh my gosh, I feel like $1,000,000 doing this. Like, this feels great. And I just feel like a different person when I'm doing it. And I never know what's going to happen until I'm doing it.
Can you tell the difference in something that's challenging? All right. So it's not just saying the easy path. Mm-hmm. Like something that's challenging that maybe you're failing at, but you're like, oh, I got this. I'm almost there. And it's challenging, but you still like sense a big internal yes versus the thing that's challenging and you're like, I can quit. I'm a quitter. I want to be a quitter. Mama raised a quitter. I'm quitting this. I'm not doing this anymore.
Right.
Is that something that's come in the last year? Is that something that's come, like you knew that early on? No, I'm not doing that. That's not my thing. I'm going to quit that.
I think knowing the difference has come in the past year.
Okay.
Because all those things I said that I feel awesome doing and feel like I'm made at, preaching, teaching, and concerts, are super hard.
Yeah.
And I am constantly, I don't think most people do this, but I don't know what it says about me, but I watch back pretty much everything that I do. I record everything that I do, whether it's concert, preaching, or teaching. And I watch it back and I'm improving, trying to improve constantly. I'm finding like, there's a dead space there, or that was not how I wanted to communicate that. Or man, I really flubbed those. How exactly do I want to say that? Or man, I felt the room, like the air come out of the room when I made the transition from this song to this song. This was the moment where people would probably check their phone. How do I erase that? Mm-hmm. So those things, preaching, teaching, and performing concerts, are very, very difficult. And they make me like want to pull my hair out sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very difficult to prepare well. But man, the payoff is amazing. And I really feel like I'm really good at it when I get to that payoff point where I'm actually on stage and things go really, really well. On the other hand, the other things that I've tried, it's just all I want to pull my hair out. Even the payoff. The payoff is more of like a, thank goodness I didn't screw that up.
Thank God that's over.
Glad that's over.
Yeah.
Like, got out of there, escaped. Man, that was close. And it's just, and especially when I can tell that it's just for the check.
Yeah.
Like just for the paycheck.
Yeah.
And I'm like, when that's the only reward for me, that's a huge sign like this isn't right.
Mm. So I want to ask this because there's an idiom, I guess that's what you'd say, that if you find what you love, you'll never work a day in your life, right? We use that expression, especially in American culture. Like that what we do, if we love it, it never feels like work. That, I don't think that's true because I think it's work, but would you say that's the exploration for you, Clark? And maybe, Brian, you can answer this for yourself. Are you trying to get life to where you're just doing the things you love?
I would say no to that. I would agree with you when you were saying that idiom is not true. I think it's romantic. I think maybe some people might experience that. I don't. When I have a sermon to prepare for, I don't enjoy the preparation. It's really hard. It takes
mm-hmm.
a lot for me to focus and to be super critical of myself and have the high standard. And if I just do like, if I just relieve my life, my daily routine from whatever feels like work, I would be screwed. Like I would do nothing that is any good at all. I would be one of those artists who are super talented and work at McDonald's, like who don't do it full time, who people talk like, man, why? It's crazy. Like you see some of the stars and you're such a better singer than them. And what? And then you go like, yeah, I know it's crazy. The music industry, politics, and you make all these excuses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I would be if I just did whatever I wanted. But everything that you do, you have to treat it like a job, especially in the creative space. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you guys know that. I mean, like this podcast is, I know you guys said you're only 10 or fewer episodes in, but and it's a lot of fun talking to each other and to different guests and stuff, but there's still a ton of work involved. And if you guys just did whatever you felt like doing, the quality wouldn't be what it is. You know, it's that way with anything.
I think there's the tension between like activity and fulfillment and then identity for me.
That's good.
Like where it's, I think that, that if you find, if you do what you love, then you'll never work a day in your life. I think there's this fulfillment of that where there are times where I'm trying to follow the fruit. I'll just be honest. This is fruitful. It's fruitful internally for me. Mm-hmm. Externally, it's fruitful for the people I'm involved in. I want to follow the fruit. But I don't get identity from the fruit. So I'm always like trying to navigate this, follow the fruit and follow the Father. Like, because I get identity from following the Father. But there are times where like I also get a lot of fulfillment from the fruitful things that I get to do. And that's not so much of a metric success. This many people liked it. I saw Clark sing his face off at this place in Nashville one time. There's probably, I don't know, 200 people in the room. Austin was there. Who else was there from
Neiman?
Chattanooga? What now?
Neiman?
Yes.
Davis on drums?
Yeah. And then what's his name on sax?
Jay Newsom.
Yes. And those guys looked so fulfilled. Yeah. And it wasn't a metric thing.
Yeah.
It was fruit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And there is a struggle for activity versus identity and who I am.
Yeah.
And then what is fulfilling in my life. And I live in that tension at times. Just trying to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's good.
I also think there's some things God wired us up for, like that we are uniquely designed to do. You've expressed your three, Clark. It's preaching, teaching, and performing and singing. Like God has hardwired you, Brian. You are an exceptional communicator. Like God's hardwired you to do that.
Yes.
Like I give you flowers on two back-to-back episodes now. But I think there's. Not that it's not work, and I think this is what maybe we're trying to get to, is this idea that when we're in the design of God, it is fulfilling. Like, God built me to do this.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's so many people who are doing things and living outside of that. Like, and some of it's free. Like, nobody in this show right now is getting paid. Like, and our podcast will probably never make money. It's always going to cost us more than we make. Checks in the mail, Clark.
it's from a tobacco company.
From a tobacco company. That's a different story. But I think when you do what God's built you to do, you just feel alive in it. It doesn't mean it wasn't hard. It doesn't mean it wasn't work. But it's like the purpose of my soul, what God's designed, this is it. And I'm wondering, Clark, if maybe some of those things you're talking about, like, I don't want to do it, is just things that are outside your design.
I think so. Even when I'm really good at those things, they still feel very outside of my design. I think that's
the confusing totally part, especially when I look at Clark. Okay, because Clark could come into a worship environment and sing, and Clark legitimately loves Jesus a lot.
Right.
And he will do so great because of his skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And then it would look naturally to say, one, his skill set says do this. It would look like everybody watching said, man, he is alive in that moment. And he is alive worshiping the God that he loves.
Right.
But then if I put him in a room and he gets to take all of these people on a journey performatively, still loving the God that created him, but it's a very different thing than when somebody is taking people on a worship experience or an encounter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But from the outside looking in, it's like, yo, you were alive, bro. You were alive in that because you did good. Because you did good, yeah. You must have been alive.
Yeah.
Do you get a lot of voices in your life trying to point you in directions?
Definitely.
Saying, yeah. Especially like American
with the
Idol
best intentions.
Every right. Like you had people saying, do this. Has that stopped? Have you pretty much got your own Like Lane?
No.
Now?
I mean, ever since I was like, I mean, the moment I could sing, it started, you know, when I was like seven. I mean, people, whether it was my mom or someone at church or teachers or friends, it was always like, oh, no, let me tell you what you should be doing. And many of those conversations were very life-giving and great advice and led me to good things. But it's still people from the outside looking in. They're either inspired by like a prophetic word from God, which happens, or they're just, man, this all just makes sense. You should be doing this. And then I do that thing. I'm like, I hate this. Well, it's because you got to do this, especially when I went on American Idol singing When a Man Loves a Woman, Let's Get It On, Sunday Morning, Taking It to the Streets, Georgia on My Mind. Like, I got plenty of church people telling me how I was running from the calling of God on my life, because the calling of God on my life was to be a worship pastor, was to lead worship in church.
Yeah.
And honestly, man, I have led worship my whole life, and the only time, this is going to sound so weird, but it's just the truth, and I'm happy to be corrected by it and to learn that this is wrong, but the only time I feel alive is when no one's singing along. Like, I can sing the part for everyone to sing along with and lead the song. I'm capable of doing that. I get way in my head of like, what's the next part? Or do I come in here? Or what's the MD saying in the talkback mic? What's the click? Is this the right place? I can't hear myself very well, whatever it is. And I'm just like holding on for dear life. Like, man, I hope I'm supposed to be really good. They hired me to come in for this. I can't be worse of a leader than their like volunteers. And it's like, got through it. And then if it's a church that's like down with flowing, and then it's after, and then I'm like, in the moment, and I just start to worship God kind of freely and prophetically, alive, bam, there. And there might be moments where, like, let's sing this all together, and in that moment, it feels good. But one of those things that I've been told my whole life that I'm supposed to do is lead worship and, like, the worship leading set to start the service. And that is one thing that I have pretty much never felt right doing, which sounds impossible to be true, but it is. At least that's how I felt.
No, I'm in agreement. And again, I'm a bit rebellious. We don't know each other as well as you know, Brian. We just met. So I think the church has drawn boxes that we expect people to fit into. And sometimes people have gifts that don't fit into the boxes.
Yeah.
And I think maybe...
But it's...
Go ahead, Clark.
No, I agree with you. Because I have, like, all the gifts of, like, vocal ability. And I have the gift of loving God deeply. So what the heck else do you need to be a worship leader? I don't know, but I still feel like a first baseman playing outfield.
Yeah.
I just feel like it doesn't feel... Which is, like, how is it... I feel alive in the congregation, fully right. alive, worshiping God in the congregation, all in. When I have to go, good morning, church, let's stand to our feet. Come on, let's pray. I'm immediately like, I feel so outside of myself.
But maybe you don't need to be that guy. Like, again, this I'm an old man. I'm not old man. I'm turning 49 this month, but I feel like an old man. I met with a coach recently, and he said, you're what we're calling second life. So I'm living a second life right now. And all the things of the past, youth pastor, church planter, those seasons have been something behind me. But I think what I'm realizing is there's some design in me, some way God's built me, that don't always fit neatly in the box of how we do church. And so if you're saying, Clark, that your giftingness is from a prophetic worship, maybe it's not to be the primary leader, but in moments to be prophetic for the church. And that doesn't always neatly fit in our hour and 15. Brian feels like he has comments about that.
Okay. Okay. If I'm putting a team together,
yeah,
I want Clark on my team.
Oh, for sure.
If I'm putting a vocal team together, I can name people that I would love to have. Okay, so I want Ashley there for sure. My wife, she's amazing. I would probably make her the worship coordinator for that, for whatever our set was. I'd let her do that. She's great. She's going to hear from the Holy Spirit
right
5 weeks in advance. I want Tyler Richardson there. I want Clark there.
Yeah.
I would love Rhea to be there. These are friends that we know. People listening don't know right these people. I could name a few other people that I would want in the room. I want this person on bass. I want this person there. And it's not just because who's the most talented. I want Clark there. I'm not asking Clark to lead. I'm not asking Clark to, hey, will you be the worship leader? I definitely want him on the team. Because one, I know he would stand on the stage with 10 other people and worship his guts out. And then I also know I could, at the end or at any point, I could say, yo, Clark, go to the piano. Just like, sing. And I think there's just something that's supposed to happen in the room where people are supposed to listen. Mm. Okay, so I think you're John the Baptist, not Joshua. Like, John the Baptist was a voice in the wilderness, not a voice among voices. It wasn't one voice crying among all these voices. It was a voice crying out in the wilderness, opposed to Joshua, who's like leading a couple million people, a couple hundred thousand people, whatever. I got to lead all these people across this river. Everybody get in order, march around the city. No, now be quiet. No, now shout. Now do this. Both are in the kingdom. But there's a reason he didn't send John the Baptist after Moses. And I think, like, you're John the Baptist. Like, you're the voice that's crying out in the wilderness. And so for that to happen, everybody's got to shut up. And not in a bad way. Not because their voices are not. But there is a thing that you need to be quiet.
But the church doesn't know what to do with John the Baptist.
Okay, do you think I'm wrong? Does any, like,
No, comment, you're right on.
Run.
That feels right on. And then the times in church where I've done this, where I have had the space to do exactly what you're saying,
yeah,
is when I've been preaching.
Mm.
And then I go to the altar call moment.
Yeah.
Or I, in the middle of the sermon, go to the keyboard and start singing, but it's from that more like let me minister to the congregation through song rather than let's stand up to our feet and let's sing this song together.
Right.
Almost like our verbiage has not included what we would call a minister of music as opposed to the room coordinator.
Yeah.
Right? And they are both needed,
right,
and gifted.
I would even say, you know, we come from Pentecostal charismatic culture. Like, for our friends that may not come from that, and we pride ourselves on freedom. We pride ourselves on space for the Holy Spirit.
Oh,
that's we tout that, but I don't know that we always make margin for it, and we don't like the interruption of God through somebody.
It depends. It depends where you're at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt there are places where, like, I felt like I could do anything and they're just truly wide open for it. And then there are places that really excel at tight schedules, get you out at this time, and more people come to the Lord because of that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think it just depends on where you're at. But I do think I don't quite fit in most people's most churches programming.
Okay, so loving the Lord, loving worship and music, and knowing you have a unique, not always embraced or understood. Maybe it's like you may have been embraced, but it's not always understood. what you're bringing. How do you fit? How do you continue to grow spiritually in a church that a church culture or people that don't always understand and are discovering alongside of you what this looks like for an artist and a performer to come in and move from performing to the prophetic, as opposed to people who move from worship and exaltation to prophetic? We're comfortable with worship, 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 prophetic. But we haven't really done a lot of, like, where it's performative, prophetic.
Yeah.
Or it's preaching, music ministry, the ministry of music into the prophetic. How do you not just say, nah, man, I'm good. I'm just going to stay over here, artistry. I'm going to do my social media. I'm going to write more love songs and just let that go.
Right. Well, I can't, just because it would feel, if I didn't do that, it would feel like the equivalent of saying the same thing about performing music. Like if I just, like concerts, like if I said, you know what, forget church, I'm just going to do this over here. I don't want to like preach anymore, or even try to minister or like prophetic worship. It would feel like a limb was being cut off, and I just couldn't. When I actually get the opportunity to do it, to perform and then go into prophetic, there are, like, it's so right in the moment, and it's not because of me, it's because of, like, that's what God made me to do, and there are no arguments. Everyone, like, it works great. No one's like, what's happening? It's just because it's so sincere, and I mean it, and I really, like you said, like, I really do love God a lot, and I love worshiping him. And when that happens, like, it works really well. So it's more, honestly, the hardest part is the email. It's like, hey, we want you to lead worship, da da da. And then, like, how do I actually communicate this different vision I have for your own church? And a vision that you probably don't have and don't understand, and it doesn't really quite fit in your box. That's been the hardest part, I think.
Okay, do you remember this moment in the show in Nashville? I think it was, I can't remember the venue, it wasn't a dive bar, it was a really nice place. But, okay, so it was that night, you and Austin, all your guys are there, and you're ending the set, maybe, I think you guys did leave stage, with that vamp of keep me where the light is, keep me where the light, you know.
Oh, like, yeah, yeah.
And the room shifted.
Did John Mayer keep me where the light is?
Yeah. But like Clark's on keys and they're playing and the whole room shifts. And it's like he's now just singing, I need the light, right? Like, and just singing this thing. And it's not, there's no church service. Like, right. There's no ushers, deacons aren't there. It was very sacred. Everybody in the room knew what he's singing about. That we're no longer in gravity. This is something different. Do you have those moments a lot? Like, I was there at that show. You've done so many things since then. Does that happen on a regular basis with you when you're out?
Yeah, pretty much every time, every show. And one thing that I love doing and I feel I'm called to do is like get out of, we can experience the prophetic and the gift of music without being in church pews or church building. God is the God of music. And when I'm singing Gravity, my mind is on him, and it's a worship song from beginning to end.
Yeah.
For me. And art is God's invention. And it's expression of human, the human experience and human emotion and feeling. And it's a gift from God, and he's in it. He created it. 'Cause if he didn't, then who else would have? Who could possibly be responsible for such beautiful harmony. And even harmony itself doesn't make any sense. Like, why do these two notes sound great together and these two notes sound horrible, you know? And so you can partake in this, in like the currency of God's glory in those songs, and you don't have to be singing to a click guide for that. And you don't have to be singing elevation. If you're singing God, keep me where the light is, if you're singing like, if you're lamenting on the gravity, the natural pull of this world that we live in, this flesh that we live in of sin, and you're lamenting in that, and then you're singing, it's just God somehow, keep me where the light is. I don't understand how that's any different than singing at an altar call. And so that's how I treat it in services. And it's not, doesn't feel novelty. It doesn't feel like I'm trying to do a thing. It's the same way I approach every song, even if I'm singing a love song about my wife. And people just, it works, you know, because it's natural and it's real. It's sincere.
Yeah. I won't listen to Gravity the same now. Like, this is one of my favorite songs, like, all time. Like, I will not hear it the same at this point.
Dude, if you hear it and think of gravity as our sinful nature, as the pull of this world that we are in that is constantly trying to pull us down. Maybe not trying to pull us down, but it's like just that natural sin that we live in that pulls us down. It's a gospel song.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, John Mayer live at the Nokia, Gravity, like, that's one of my like favorite tracks. I like wear that out, but I will not hear it the same at this point. And I think that's unique. I think you're right that I wrote this down, that the art is God's invention. Like one of the things I wrestled in my master's that was headed, we talked about this when we talked before we got on the show, we talked about master's degrees and different things. One of the lessons I learned that was really difficult for me to get over the mental hump of is when a professor looks and she goes, all truth is God's truth. And on the surface, I was like, of course. And then she starts to pull out some things that are true that maybe aren't like, not biblical, but they're like, they're just true, like gravity, right? And I had to start going like, my mind was like, oh, okay. And it took me a while to get to the understanding of even if it's not like directly in scripture, but it's true, it is of God. And so this idea of art being God's invention, even if it's not overtly gospel and it's art, I'm wondering if it's of the Lord. Now that's a thread to pull and get really dangerous in, but I think we can start to see art differently.
I think it's like anything, it can be perverted.
Yeah.
So where the hard line is, because and there really isn't a gray area for me. The hard line is any art that is promoting a sinful or destructive lifestyle is out. Everything else.
Yeah.
I'm partaking. I'm dining with God as I sing about happy things and sad things.
Right.
You know, cry with those who cry, like mourn with those who mourn. God's close to the brokenhearted. You know, when I'm singing a song about heartbreak and I'm using the tool, the gift that he gave us, which is harmony and melody and poetry and lyrics and rhythm and tone, that is an element of God. It's a language of God. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
I think there is a black and white to the distortion of what God created, whether that's art, whether it's teaching, where we took truth and distorted it.
Right.
Full stop. There is that. But I also think there are these things that the fallen nature has grabbed a hold of. No one on this podcast would come into alignment with pornography.
Correct.
Ever.
Yeah.
Like that is full distortion of the beautiful thing that God created in the human body, in sexuality, all of those things. But then like, man, I got the chance to be in Paris and go to the Louvre, and it's like some of the statues and sculptures or the paintings, I don't know that you call that nudity pornography. Mm-hmm. There's times where this expression of the garden, and they're painting right. this place where it was a shame-free environment, and it has nudity, but it's art, mm-hmm. and it creates this space that sometimes it is not always as easy to define, to say that's distortion. Mm-hmm. And that's art. And I don't think Christians are trying to storm museums or rip pages out of books that have David, the sculpture yeah. David on it, and say, this is why our country is falling. It's because of these sculptures. Yeah. And it is, I think, a tension to say, okay, this art could be confused as
mm-hmm.
a distortion.
And what's tough about, I think it's the intent of the artist, first and foremost, and then how people respond to it is almost outside of the artist's control. And mm-hmm. one example of that is I was having a conversation with someone who is truly of the belief, someone that we both know and revere. And this person was truly under the belief that any music outside of worship music is of the devil and is not godly, all of it, mm-hmm. no matter what. And so I was just challenging that. And I was like, what about, like, when I write a love song about my wife that is, like, just lovely and wonderful? And she's like, yeah, but what if someone else hears that and then they think they, like, imagine themselves being sung to by you, and now they're having fantasies about you being married to them. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, how, I mean, sure.
Yep, okay.
So, like, I think it's the intent of the artist. Yeah, you have a responsibility where it's like, you have to be aware that if you're real, what you're singing about, how easy it is for someone to fall into a sinful temptation. But at the end of the day, you can only do so much.
Yeah, I think I got pushback on that whole idea, and I'm glad you did, because someone can just look at a picture of you, Clark, and have those same thoughts. You don't have to be a song. Like if right. somebody's, like, the Bible tells us very clearly that we have some sort of say on our thought life and should have say in our thought life. So I don't know that the artist, the individual, or whoever has responsibility if their intent is not to create that thought life.
But at the same time, I think we would all agree with this, that you don't just get to do whatever you want without right. without consideration of if it could be a stumbling block.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be yeah. real, like, clear. I can't just say, okay, because it'd be better for you to be cast in the ocean, blocks around your feet, than you to cause someone to stumble. But I think there are certain things that stumbling, causing someone to stumble, is like the only option, right? It's yeah, like nobody right, was totally. Growing from that.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Nobody's marriage was getting better when they started OnlyFans. Stumbling was the only thing that was true. Ever going yes. to happen.
Right. Right.
Right.
Right. As opposed to, you know, me posting a picture that where I happen to look fantastic.
As always.
Okay. They could stumble. They could.
Right, but you can't help it.
But there's a lot of other options besides right. stumbling. Right.
Right.
It could just be like a memory of your friend. Oh, it's Brian. Oh man. Yeah. Like, it could just be
what a great hat
he's what a great it's hat he has on. What's he hiding under there? Right?
Right.
It could just be that. But when you have a lot of options in your art that aren't something that is the distortion of God, I think we're now starting to be in a safe environment. So there's a lot of options. You're singing that song. There's a whole lot of options other than this distorted view of what God could be.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be like a safe place. Okay.
I mean, if let's take Clark's friend's line of thinking, if that were to be true, we've got to cut Song of Solomon out of the book.
Yeah.
Like Song of Solomon has got some crazy stuff in it. We just have to like rip it out and be like, we can't read that. God didn't give us that.
Do you think that view is the minority though?
Yes.
That view of, I think it has to be, right?
I would think so.
Today.
Yeah.
10 years ago, maybe not.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was, the church tried to draw clear lines between secular and Christian. I think they winked at things like classical music because there wasn't lyrics. So like, oh, Beethoven's okay. There's no lyrics there. Right? I mean, or things like that. But I think, I don't want to say it's more gray. I'm going to just, like if they ever listen to this, Need to Breathe is my favorite band on planet Earth.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Really?
I didn't know.
Seven times I've seen them. Incredible show.
I love that.
But they live in the sort of that gray space of going, we make art, we're Christians, some of it's overtly to God, some of it's you can make interpretation on. And they're like, they thrive in that space. Like this sort of like, we want to make good music, we want to make good art. Some of it's directly about God, some of it may not be.
Don't you think there are people who create art or create music and stuff, and they specifically do it outside of the church as an act of rebellion?
Oh, good question.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people grew up being taught by the church that anything outside of the church is rebellion. And yeah. So then they go, that's like the whole nother point of like, we wonder why a lot of, not as much anymore, there's so many more Christians in secular bands now. Yeah. But we wondered, you know, 10, 15 years ago, why there was so much debauchery in different artists, bands, and secular artists. It's because we told them when they were growing up in church that if they didn't do church music, they were sinners and they were rebelling. Yeah. So they believed them. And mm-hmm. So when they followed the calling, which was not church music, they also followed the heresy that they were rebels and they were sinners. And so they just accepted that. That's my theory. It's not as much prominent in that way anymore, but
The music that you create, the albums, the whatever, EPs, all the stuff that the things that you're going to do, none of that for me, as long as I've known you, has ever felt like an act of rebellion though.
Oh, never.
Ever.
No. Never. I think some people do, and are just hurt from the church and whatever, but no. I even had in Medland Hall, my freshman dorm at Lee, I was fresh off of a really powerful encounter by God. The summer before I got to Lee is when I actually gave God the power of deciding in my life. I really became a follower of him for the first time. And I was so frustrated because I couldn't write any worship songs, and I was really trying. And I've written other songs at this mm-hmm. point. I couldn't write worship songs, and I was trying. And I was like, all I need are like four chords and four words, and I'm like, done. Like, what? Why can't I do this? And I remember praying after like 2 hours of trying and failing. I remember praying and be like, God, I'm at my rope's end. Whatever music you want me to make, let it come out. And dude, I wrote a song in 10 minutes, and it's a like soul blues song about not being appreciated by your significant other. Fastest I've ever written a song ever. And I remember going, really? I mean, I'm down. I really like that song, but like, it's not what I expected when I asked God for a song. You know what I mean? But that's just what happened.
I want to come back to the conversation we had earlier about design, though. And I think we use this word a lot. One of the values we have as a couple nowadays is that authenticity is essential, being who God's made you to be. Do you think the soul song that you wrote in Medlin Hall, which still exists and still falling apart, but is just the authentic expression who God has designed Clark to be.
Mm-hmm. As an artist. Like, yeah. That's who he's called me to be in that exact space. And that doesn't fit with the generic church culture, but that is exactly my takeaway, yeah.
You think God ever gets bored of us trying to create something so similar to what all the other people are creating?
I think God gets frustrated anytime we try to throw out his creative element that he's put in us to make something new and fresh, and we try to just copy what someone else did. I think he's always like, nope, you missed it. Like, that's not what I made you for. Like, you've got so much more in you. I've already made one of them. Why are you making one of those? They already did that. I already gave them the gift to make that. That's what I made Chris Tomlin for. There's nobody else like Chris Tomlin. Quit trying to be like Chris Tomlin and be you. I do think that is a point of frustration for God, I would imagine.
In the industry, okay, is it me or is it trending to be Christian or to be a person of faith?
Yeah, I think it totally is. And from what I can tell, it is a good solid percentage of authenticity. Like, it's not, there are certainly people who are just following a trend and like to wear a cross necklace and say like, thanks be to God. Mm-hmm. And people go crazy at their concert. But it feels like a symptom of a revival that has been in the making for decades to me. That's what I felt God calling me to, was that he was rising up an army of Christians, of spirit-filled Christians, to infiltrate the secular music industry. That's what I felt like he was saying to me when I was 18 years old. And I feel like we're seeing the fruit of that 16 years later.
Yeah. As an Idol alum, it seemed like this season, I watched it mostly in clips on social media, like we watch everything else. It felt like faith was a much larger part. Now, there's always been people of faith on the show. There's always been the Clark Beckhams and the Carrie Underwoods, and we've had the one-offs or the
two. I was waiting for him to name who else. I was really interested who all the faith people
yeah,
was.
Yeah, I mean, but Danny Gokey and other, but it's basically anybody who lives in Nashville at this point.
Yeah.
But it felt like this season there was a considerable amount of them. The three finalists actually all very, very outspoken about their faith. Do you think we're seeing that just, I mean, obviously American Idol embraced it. They do a faith night now, which I never thought would happen. But do you think that's sort of emblematic of what is happening industry-wide?
I do, yeah. Because, I mean, on my season, they were never afraid of me saying anything about church or my faith at all. But I was certainly in the minority. And there were other wonderful, like, strong believers on my season. But we were the minority. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, now, like you said, there's Faith Week, which I actually might have a problem with, which sounds silly. But like, okay, what about all the people that have a different, like they believe in a different religion? Now they have to sing like a song to a God they don't believe in. You know, like that's a little tough. Almost like separation of church and state kind of a thing. But that's
no, I love this hot take I'm getting though on that.
I like that. I know. It is an odd, especially a hot take from, you know, a Christian. But
stop Faith Night. Well, can we clip that? Clark Beckham says stop Faith Night at American Idol.
Stop worshiping.
I mean, they gave him some margin. Like, you can sing like Bridge Under Troubled Water or something else. That was,
you're
like,
right.
Like,
you're
spiritually
right.
Adjacent.
There were, yeah, you're right about that.
There was a long time it felt though, like if it's some pastor or Christian, they're the underdog.
Yeah.
And all the Christians have to come and support this underdog character.
It was that way. It's why Chris, like, I get hot takes. It's why some people think Chris Allen won, is the church world went like, we got to vote for our guy.
Yeah. I love Chris Allen. I voted for Chris Allen.
I voted for Chris Allen. I thought he was great.
Would you ever go back as a contestant?
I in a heartbeat.
Okay.
I would do it all again.
No, I mean now. Not would you do it again? Would you, if they send, if you know, obviously not just blind auditions, but if they were like, hey, we'll, you know, we'll guarantee you whatever, top 24. We're gonna put you in. You're gonna get top 16. We're gonna put you into if whatever. Would you do it again?
I could figure out logistics, like if Chanley could be with me, easy. In a heartbeat, dude.
I love this idea of like an alum season.
I'd do whatever they wanted. I love the whole process from the very first audition all the way to the finale. You don't have to put me in the, I mean, some of the best part is the green room in the audition when there's 200 of you and there's like 70 guitars and everyone's like checking each other out. And some people already think they won the show. Some people are really humble and interesting. And some people are really fantastic. And we're all like trading songs and jamming.
I wonder what your following would do. Like the people who have been fans for a long time and are still fans, everything Clark does, they're just the people who have stayed with you. If you put it out there and like, guys, I'm thinking about just showing up at the Nashville audition.
Well, they would have to. So if you make the live shows, you can't audition again. So obviously I could audition.
Oh, so you can't. I didn't know that.
Okay.
No, but if they did, like an alumni season or like the best of the best or like a top 10.
Okay, so have you seen the videos where a pro athlete dresses up like somebody else, like with the makeup, and they just dress up and pretend to
be. Undercover boss?
Yeah, boy, no, I'm thinking about like the basketball players who go in the street courts and they're like the grandpa that does like a 1,000 pull-ups or something. Yes, this should be a thing.
Well, the problem.
Undercover Clark.
Undercover Clark.
The problem is there are too many people who are monsters who aren't, like, I would have to dress up like I was actually 95 years old. Like, that would work. But, like, there's so many monster singers out there. You don't need to, like, fake. You know, you just actually get someone who's a monster who no one knows.
I just think, I don't know that he could hide his voice. Like, it's such a unique voice. I think, like, as soon as he sang, somebody would be like, this sounds really familiar.
Yeah, but it's all new judges. Nobody. Okay. Right? There's nobody on still.
Brian's there.
Yeah. I actually sang at a Christmas thing with Carrie, so she might catch. She probably, I don't know.
Okay. This is
Brian's down a
full deviation from previous conversations, right? Of meaningful spirituality and Christ-centered growth. You've sang with a lot of people. You've met a bunch of celebrities, all this kind of stuff. Are there times you've been like just starstruck? When?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Who? Like, I want to know.
Most of the time, I'm starstruck and I have to hold it together. Most of those times I succeed and hold it together. There have been a handful of horribly awkward, embarrassing interactions. The three that come to mind, Will Smith.
Oh, okay.
Tori Kelly. And Doc Rivers, NBA basketball coach.
Doc Rivers, okay.
I was singing the national anthem right after American, like literally the day after the finale of my season. I was in LA doing press. Brian McKnight was supposed to sing the national anthem, and then he couldn't for some reason. And so the Idol press team was like, how about Clark? And so last minute, like hours before the game, they're like, hey, do you want to sing the national anthem at the Clippers game? It's a playoff game. By the way, if you sing the anthem and they win, then they'll fly you out to do the next one until they lose, basically. It's like a thing that they were doing. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm a huge basketball fan. Sports was my first love before music. I played basketball in high school, wanted to play in college, wasn't good enough, but just loved the game. And I sing the anthem. And I walk right past the benches and I look over and I see like all these like Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, Doc Rivers, like all these superstars.
You're talking about Lob City days.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I wouldn't dare like try to say something or meet them. Like literally they're getting up to start the game. And the coach is just saying like last words. So I'm just there. I'm just like looking like, wow, this is cool. And I walk by. And then Doc Rivers like sees me out of the corner of his eye. And he just breaks the huddle really fast and just shakes my hand. He's like, hey, thanks so much. That was it. Just a polite, very nice. Mm-hmm. Hey, thanks so much. Great job or whatever. Well, when he did that, I wanted to say, oh, thank you so much. I love that you're here on the Clippers. I think you've done a great job with this team. I'm really excited about the future and good luck in this playoff series. That's what I wanted to say.
Because you're a fan. You're a basketball fan.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's a stereotype that musicians and sports don't correlate.
Yeah.
That we don't know anything about sports. We don't play sports. We're not athletic. We're awkward. And like, that's the stereotype. And I'm just a singer. And so that's what I wanted to say. But right when I started to talk, he had already started to break away from the handshake and turn back to his team. And so I like stopped because I was like, I don't want to interrupt him. And I got like a couple words out. Hey, and I just want to like that. And then he stopped and turned back to me and was like, what was that? And at this point, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm like keeping you from your team. You guys are up 3-1 in the playoff series. Like, this is the biggest game. You guys have never made it to the Western Conference Finals. If you win tonight, you, like, this is a big deal. And I just like tried to make it quick. And I was like, I'm a big fan of basketball.
I don't remember the
and
game.
And he goes, oh, thanks.
So I don't remember the game. Did they win or lose that game?
They lost.
We're not going to pin that on Clark, but, you know.
I felt so stupid. I was like, I just perpetuated the stereotype.
When were you start? Brian, when's the moment? You've met a lot of people. You don't ever talk about anybody. Was there a moment you were starstruck?
I don't think I've met somebody that has put me in that position. Like, there definitely would be.
Yeah.
Like, I probably maybe didn't know the people I've met. I didn't know their scope of work enough at the time I met them to be like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I didn't know you did all this, this, and this, and this. But, like, if I met Will Smith,
right,
I for sure would be starstruck. I don't think I would, like, or maybe even Tori Kelly. Like, I'd be like,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, I would have too many thoughts going through my mind about, I really love this song, or I loved this movie. Like Will Smith, when you were in this movie, I would have so many thoughts. Like, I would have too many thoughts to compute with communicating while my brain is overthinking.
Yeah. And then you don't want to be that person.
Right.
And not wanting to be that person makes you that person. Because the most common person is the person who doesn't want to be that person and is going to be that person anyway. And then you're apologizing all over yourself. And then that puts them in an awkward situation. Now they have to take care of you and like make you feel like you're not intruding, even though you are. And then they have to laugh at your jokes. And then like it can really spiral. And I have witnessed that and I have been that. And it is not fun.
Doc Rivers, is that the worst? That's the worst of it?
Tori Kelly's pretty bad. Will Smith was bad, but Will Smith was probably the worst, but he got what was happening and thought it was really funny.
Yeah.
So like it was all good. But yeah. Will Smith, basically, I like met him, dapped him up, and I wanted to say, man, I'm a monster fan of yours. Like, I love everything that you do. I'm an actor myself, and I think just the dynamics you have are crazy. Of what you do. I'm just a big fan. That's what I wanted to say.
Which is fantastic. That's
yeah.
Well done. Well done.
Yeah.
Good and faithful servant.
Yeah, to you guys. But to him, I got something caught in my throat. And I said, I'm not making this up. I said, hey, I'm a huge monster. Got something caught in my throat after the word monster. So not only did I tell Will Smith, hey, I'm a huge monster, then I growled at him, trying to clear my throat.
He went full I Am Legend.
I just like dapped him up and was like, I'm a huge monster.
I'm a huge monster.
And then I caught myself and I was like, fan, I'm a monster fan of you. And then he thought it was really funny. So it was fine. Yeah. But that was pretty bad. Tori Kelly, I just hugged her and then like her hair got caught in my mouth.
I mean, girl's got a lot of hair and it's curly. Like, that's fair.
I was smiling.
Why are you open mouth hugging people, bro?
I was smiling when I hugged her. And then I came out and was like, and
you came out like that weird fan. You're like trying to clip it and sell it on the eBay.
Oh, man. That's so funny.
That was. I met her a couple times.
Okay. Advise us. Advise me. I think I would definitely be starstruck if I met CeCe Winans.
Oh, and CeCe for sure.
I think I would be, yeah.
Well, she's an easy person to meet because she's so kind.
Yeah.
And, like, it's impossible to feel awkward around her.
I was in love with her in college.
Wow. Hot take.
Yes. Absolutely in love with her in college. I had her Throne Room DVD just on repeat. Right.
Nice.
And I think I would be starstruck with her. Give me the advice. I see a celebrity that I want to meet or at least have an interaction, even if I don't like. And my general rule has been keep it really quick and read there if they're on their way. Like I saw Questlove in New York and just, you know, he walked right by us. And was like, yo, what's up? And he's headed to work, man. I was like, good looking out. Like, it was very quick, easy. How do we have the interaction? Should we just not? Is it a full stop no? Leave him alone.
No, it's definitely not a full stop no. It's, I think what, when people are approached by strangers that know them, especially if you're, like, if it happens often, like, if you have any type of celebrity in any way, shape, or form, even if it's past, like, a pastor of a local church.
Yeah.
It's, you're afraid or you're worried that they're just trying to get something from you. And I'm not saying, like, they're asking for money. They are using you to make themselves feel better. So they are going to say a couple jokes that you better laugh at. They're going to ask you to take pictures and they're going to say, it's because my mom loves you so much. She would kill me if she did this. I have to take this picture. Da, da, da. And it's just take. The best thing you can do, and this will be very easy for any, I think for anyone who is a good person, which I think are a lot of people, strictly like just thank them for the good that they've done in your life. I was talking to somebody who we were actually having this conversation and he's like, I saw one time this really famous rugby player. He's an Australian guy, really famous rugby player in the airport. He's like the Michael Jordan of rugby and he's a huge celebrity. And I couldn't believe I saw him in the airport and I just went up to him. And he said, as soon as I said, hey, I said his name, and he looked at me and I could tell that he was like, oh no, someone like found me out. Like someone, what am I about to have to witness or endure? And he said, hey, I just want to thank you for all of the joy that you have given me in my life of just the way that you play. There have been so many great memories that I have because of how hard you've played and how well that you've played. And that's all I want to say. I just love the sport and I love what you're doing. When it's all about them and it's just giving to them, the guy like totally like softened and was like, wow, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And they had this nice little conversation and that was it. Then you can just ride it out and just feel. But like if you're trying to like make a joke where they better laugh, like that's bad. or if you're trying they have to get put it on from them.
They have to become that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or if you treat them like, I know you probably get this all the time, and I'm sorry, I know you're probably late. And all I hear is, I'm fully aware that I'm interrupting your day and I'm inconveniencing you, and I don't care. That's all I hear when someone's like, because what else could it be?
Yeah.
I know you get this all the time. You probably hate it. I know you're in a hurry. Says, I am fully aware of how I'm inconveniencing you. The next thing says, but my mom loves you and I have to get a picture of you or she would kill me. But I care about my needs more than your needs. Mm. And that's the vast majority of those interactions when celebrities get approached. Has so just any, make it for them.
Has anybody in your life broken through from fan to friend?
Many.
What did it? Like where that, they were full on fan, nothing but a fan. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm like, but. And then at some level it became, you're now friends.
No one from that. Okay. No, I met some of our best friends and like in the world are people I met at a small group at church.
Yeah.
Who were fans of me and I didn't know that. But he came up and introduced himself to me and we just started talking. He didn't come like as like a fan. Like I'm a fan, yeah. I watch you on American Idol,
Can we take a picture together?
Right. He just didn't do that. And so, and then I found out, like, even in that conversation, I think he's like, dude, I've watched all your stuff. Like, you're great.
Yeah.
And then that's it. He just didn't make a weird thing about it. But I have, like, four or five different people that are very, very close to me that were just fans initially.
I think I butchered this last week. I tried to play it cool. So we went to Nashville. My daughter lives in Nashville, goes to Belmont, and we went to the Belonging for Church. Which, I mean, the Belonging is a center for Christian celebrity somewhat. And I sit down, and some blonde guy sits behind me, and then I look, and I go, oh, I know who that is. But I didn't freak out, right? And so they do this, like, 15-second, like, turn and greet somebody. Like, and I knew it was Colton Dixon. Like, I knew, but I acted like I didn't. Said, hi, I'm Jeff. He's like, oh, I'm Colton. I'm like, oh, I think you've played our town a couple times. And I was like, good to meet you. And, like, turned around. The whole time, I'm like, I know who you are. Like, totally ruined it. Like, you're just here with your daughters and your wife wanting to worship, and I'm trying to tell you how great you were.
Why did you think it was bad? What was bad?
It felt awkward on my side. Like, I know you. You don't know me, but I'm going to play like I don't know you.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've done that too. Oh, Colton, nice to meet you.
Yeah.
Are you from here? Like, you're trying to pretend like you don't know each other.
But I already heard like, the guy behind me go like, are you back from tour? And I was like, oh, well, I mean, like,
yeah.
Clearly. It just felt awkward. Now, like, listen, my best celebrity interaction was I worked at the Macy's in Lexington with Aunt Shelley.
Okay.
She wasn't there, though.
That's my Aunt Shelley that he worked with.
Long story.
Yeah, it's just.
So anyways, okay. Alice Cooper walks in. He is buying a Godiva chocolate bar and socks by himself now, just rolling up in the Macy's. And this lady I'm working with who is of a certain age who would have known Alice Cooper is like, she goes, is that Alice Cooper? And I was like, I don't know. Let's go find out. So we walk over and we go, sir, are you Alice Cooper? And he goes, that's what people tell me. I was like, cool. And I said, so what are you doing in Lexington? And he goes, well, this morning I went to the Baptist church. I played 9 holes of golf and I'm going to rock out with a crew. And I was like, oh, Motley Crue? And he's like, yes. He's like, are you coming? And I was like, no, I got kids at home. He goes, why are you so boring? And I was like, clearly my life sucks, according to Alice Cooper.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That's where he's just like, I'm just going to have fun.
Yeah. He was down to earth and so chill about it. And I didn't take a picture because I felt like that guy who was like, oh, my mom would want to know.
Yeah. Okay. So you've had a lot of notoriety at times. A ton, but then you still live in a place where you can go places and maybe nobody knows you.
For sure.
Is there inherently anything negative about a person that wants to be famous?
Depends on the intent. So if you want to be famous so your platform can get I'm bigger so you can help more people? No. If it's for social acceptance, yes. Because that is a bag that you can chase, and then you'll get it, and then you realize it's empty.
Does it have to be to help people? Can somebody just, it's not that they want to help people, they just want their art to be seen. I just want to
As be. Long as you see your art as something that helps.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay.
I believe that about mine. And it's not even like a wholesome, like, people are going to love each other more if they listen to my music. It's like, I have chords and harmonies and musical concepts that I think are of God, that God wants to use to just make people feel better and good. And I think music would be better. This is an example. Like, I would think music would be better in the world if I had a part in it. I think that's fine. That's pretty much how I feel.
Yeah. Do you want more notoriety than you have right now?
Define notoriety.
Let's see, like common acceptance among the broad congregation of people. Like you're known more culturally.
Yeah, because there are a lot of positives that come with it. One is, man, if before Idol, if I were to be at a university music like classroom, and the teacher asked me to come up and like comment on someone's performance, they'd be like, thanks. Now, like when I'm there for a workshop and someone sings and the whole room for some reason just thinks I'm like the coolest person ever and they're all fans, and then I listen to them intently and then I compliment them, like they take that so deeply. And it's not just, wow, it's a compliment, but any advice I have that I really believe will help them, they take it to heart, they write it down, they do it every day. And that is really, 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 really rewarding.
Yeah, so the notoriety gave it weight.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay. It gives a lot of weight to your words, which is really great.
Somebody I follow, John Acuff, who's a writer and speaker, he posted this week that in coaching consulting, he kind of works within that tribe a little bit, that you should raise your prices slightly. He was trying to convince people to raise their prices. He said, because what research is showing is that when you increase the level of pricing, you are showing the greater value of yourself and what you're doing. And it's interesting because, Clark, with notoriety, like I think notoriety is the same as sort of pricing. And price point is because of what you've done and who you are, what you say has greater value. And so people are going, well, Clark Beckham said I need to, you know. So I think what notoriety is like price point in some ways. It's adding value to what you have to say. And I think if what you're saying is valuable, then we have to add value to it.
Yeah, and its impact in your ministry is really what it is. Like I would love, like, that is my goal. Like, that's why I post on social media so much.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I love speaking and preaching and teaching and performing. It's because I do want that notoriety to keep going.
Well, our moms would be now fans.
But it's so important that social acceptance, like, so I can feel better about myself. The more people feel good about me and think I'm cool, that informs my self-worth. That cannot be anywhere in the equation at all. That is heroin. I mean, that is, that can't be part of the pursuit, desire for the pursuit of notoriety at all.
But isn't that so, like, isn't the veil between self-worth and, like, social acceptance, isn't it so thin?
I don't know. I don't feel that it's, for me, I have zero temptation of seeking others' approval to inform my self-worth. Zero.
And you've always been that way?
No.
Okay.
No. That was a, like, deliverance moment. It's when I really had an understanding of God's love for me, that's when it changed.
Yeah.
Then I was like, cool. Yeah, it is a zero. It's a non-factor.
Yeah, for I'm walking this out even in talking with friends and stuff. That acceptance is not the antidote to rejection. It's the other side, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't diffuse the toxic poison of the thing. It's not the antidote. It's like light is the opposite of darkness, but a candle is the antidote.
Mm-hmm.
A candle is the mechanism that does right. that. So if you need acceptance or that kind of stuff, if you have a rejection wound, those things, it doesn't matter how many followers you have. Acceptance will never heal the rejection wound. It's right. the other side of it, but it's not the healing. And at some right. level, I think wisdom or truth is almost the antidote to everything. Rejection, the antidote to rejection will be truth. Anxiety, the antidote to anxiety will be truth. I yep. almost think, and that's I'm just unpacking it with friends and stuff and talking through the difference between the opposite of a thing. Because I think if I have a rejection wound or if I have this, then I think if I get enough of the opposite, it will neutralize it.
Right.
But it's like trying to cover up stink with cologne. It's not really neutralizing it.
Yeah.
You're trying to overpower that. And it sounds like at some level there was a moment for you where it's that you even maybe said like a deliverance moment almost, like where it was a defining moment where truth came in. And so now acceptance or rejection, doesn't matter. I have this bridge of truth.
That's right.
Yeah.
And it was, and the irony is like when you feel that way, when you don't need other people's acceptance,
yeah,
that's the quickest way to get other people's acceptance. Because you don't need anything from them. And that is incredibly attractive when people mm-hmm. sense like, oh, cool. He's just like comfortable in his skin, doesn't need anything yeah. from me. Like, it's all good. Like, he's not sensitive or offended by everything. And it's like, cool.
Yeah.
And like, if you don't like me, like, that's bummer, but okay.
Was that a moment that happened like in prayer? Was it revelatory?
It was like, it was strictly like the consequence of fully believing and feeling the love of God in my life yeah. and for who I am, period.
I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know that, I don't know if we have 50 episodes in this or 500, but I already think that there are some people that I want, like, in some level to be, like, reoccurring friends.
He's your friend, so you gotta...
Right. But the conversation is so easy and fluid, and it's like, I don't really care if we talk about singing or this, but... There's yeah. so many things that are just yeah. like we love Jesus and communicating and music. And so we could talk about it feels like it's trending to let your faith show. You don't have to hide it. Mm-hmm. You can let your faith mm-hmm. show. And it's trending mm-hmm. to do that. I really enjoyed the conversation. And so I'm just putting this out. Like I would love for maybe a reoccurrence of it. Like especially like as your, you know, as your schedule, like we'll jump back in to something like that. But yeah, thanks, bro. Thanks for
of course, for dude. Sign me up. I would yeah. love to be back.
Let's give him a shout out too. He's got a brand new album coming out June 26th, acoustic worship sessions. And I'm gonna pick my favorite track already. I've not even listened to it, but he does "I Could Sing of Your Love Forever," the Delirious song, and I'm a delirious guy, so that'll be on repeat for me. Again, our friends listening, June 26th, that album drops. A couple of questions to yeah. wrap us up, though, Clark.
Okay. Somebody who's out there who is afraid to try it because they just don't have the confidence. I ask people this almost every episode. What would you tell the person who's not sure if they have it to just try?
Try what?
Yes. Yeah. I think a lot of people are just... that gap between should I write the book? Should I try out for Idol? Should I, at some level, you just did something. And a lot of people, they just,
yeah,
they're not.
I think when people see the try and they see me, they think of American Idol and they don't think of the like 10 years of singing before that. I think what's going to help people make that step to try to do the thing
Yeah.
They're afraid that it's not going to be good. I want to assure you, it will not be good. And that's the first step. Like your first.
Yeah.
Like my first sermon was awful. Awful, awful, awful. Mm-hmm. My first song I ever wrote was hysterically bad. My first like seven songs I wrote were humiliatingly bad.
Yeah.
Most people are afraid to take a step because they think they'll mess up and won't be good. That is the prerequisite to doing this thing. So it's going to be bad. And that's just the first
for
the
a
first
while. Step. Maybe.
So find freedom in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Especially if you have good taste, you're going to be fully aware how bad you are at the thing. But yeah. There's no way around it. Some people are freaks of nature and the first time they try something, they're just amazing. But I would rather be the person that has to work really hard, gain the skills it takes to be good, because that will serve me better in the long run.
I wouldn't rather be that person, but I don't have a choice.
Yeah, me either.
Me either.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, Clark, we see being a nobody around here as something good. Has a lot of negative connotations, but usually nobodies are just people in our life that nobody knows about. They don't have the notoriety. So yeah. Who's a nobody in your life that you think the world should know about?
Well, my first thought goes to like musicians. There are a couple, two come to mind immediately who I just think are, okay, three. Three come to mind immediately who are just brilliant, genius, like as good as anyone I've ever been around as far as singer-songwriters. And that would be Blake Ruby, mm-hmm. Jordy Searcy, and John Splithoff. There are many others I could name.
Yeah.
And I'll probably like kick myself in like 10 minutes thinking of others. But John has had some more success. But Jordy Searcy and Blake Ruby are some of the best songwriters that I've heard. And they are wonderful, brilliant, kind people too. So those are mine.
Awesome.
Yeah. If anybody ever gets a chance, to travel with Clark, he is the most amazing. Like, don't ever let him drive because he's the best playlist guy of all times.
Okay.
Right.
That's really funny. It's funny. I have the reputation amongst Chanley's family as the exact opposite.
No way.
Oh, wow.
Because they're not.
It's the son-in-law curse, bro. Dude. Sorry.
They're not musical. Yeah. So, like, if you dig music, and if you're a musician, I got it.
Yeah.
But if you're like, play something fun, we're going to the lake, like, I'm not the guy. And you'll be like, what is this? This is boring. I'm horrible at that. So yeah. It depends on the crowd.
Yeah.
Got it. All right.
Like in my mind, like they're either playing Lynyrd Skynyrd or like, I don't know why, but like Uncle Cracker or something. Like
yep. The family?
Yep. Yeah, that's what they're playing.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, yep. One of those two.
Or
like
Skynyrd.
90s Ja Rule. I feel like they're playing that on a boat somewhere.
That one's a miss. Yacht Rock.
Okay. All right.
I love Yacht Rock.
You love what?
Yacht Rock.
I love Yacht Rock.
Oh, there we go.
Down with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, of course, guys. Yeah. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
As we sign off here, we always tell everybody, here with a couple of nobodies, you never have to try to be somebody. So thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, except for you, bro. You got to go try.
Yeah.
Try to be somebody.
We're all nobodies.
Yeah.
That's the joy of it.